Your area of expertise, your area of study is a rather unusual one. Fantasy, ghost stories, gore. Well, what is it exactly?
I work on, well, a number of things, but really on horror fiction and horror film as much as anything else. And it kind of came about in a slightly strange way, in a kind of slightly Jekyll and Hyde way. I found myself as a graduate student writing a PhD on the novels of Jane Austen, a very sort of proper and respectable.
Not too much horror there.
Very little. But as I was doing that by day, by night I was doing what I kind of was doing for many years, which is watching horror movies. And it suddenly dawned on me after I wrote a book on Jane Austen. I thought, what am I going to do now? Write another book. What will I write a book on? And it kind of dawned on me, I kind of built up all this knowledge about horror films, about horror fiction, and I've been reading and watching them all my life. Why not do it? And what's to stop me? So I did. I wrote a history of horror films and horror fiction, and I've continued to work on that. And I mean, it kind of came about in a strange way when I was about 12 years old, I think. It was in about 1979 or thereabouts. And, video recorders were just out on the market, and we got one. And, there was in my little Welsh village, there was a video rental store, but all it had was horror movies. That's all. And so my mother decided she wanted to watch these films, and my father had absolutely no intention of watching them. But she didn't want to watch them by herself, so I was deputised to sit there. I was, and so I sat down and I watched The Exorcist and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Hills Have Eyes and various kind of zombie movies with my mother. And all of these films were subsequently banned in the UK. And, looking back, I think it was possibly the best bit of parenting she ever did. It stood me in good stead anyway. So that's what I do. And of late, I've been working on ghost stories, on the ghost stories of M.R. James, who's the great English ghost story writer, who wrote ghost stories, largely kind of Christmas ghost stories. There's a great connection between Christmas and the ghost story, going back to Dickens and the Christmas Carol. It's the time of year where, the nights are longer and people are huddled together around the fire. And so one of the things they do is tell these ghost stories, in which the dead return. And so I've been working on that. And the most recent thing I'm doing is editing an anthology of Victorian and Edwardian horror stories, some of them very famous ones by people like Bram Stoker, who was a celebrated graduate of Trinity College, my own institution, and others, less familiar. So I've been spending the last year or so of my life up to my eyes in, mad doctor stories, cannibalism stories,
and they let it all hang out then. It seemed to be the one area where you could be what you wanted to be. You could be as horrific and as gaudy and as awful as you wanted to be in Victorian horror stories.
Yeah, it's very interesting that while they're very often written in, a kind of slightly stately and respectable prose,
which makes them all the more horrific.
Which does make them all the more horrific. Playing these very ghoulish stories off with a perfectly straight face often. And many of them actually have their origins in, specifically in English colonial history. Many Victorian ghost stories and Victorian horror stories are to do with terrible things that happen out in the colonies or that people bring back with them from their time in India. So there are extraordinary large amounts of stories which begin in gentlemen's clubs with, two gents sitting around the fire with their port and cigars, and one of them says to the other one something like, all of this reminds me of that dashed rum business in Borneo a few years ago, and cue a story about, people being eaten by natives and that sort of thing. So, yeah, you're right. I think it was one of the few areas where the often quite respectable Victorians, they did have famously had a kind of dark side, and it is the great era for horror. Most of the classic horror narratives that we have, from Frankenstein to Jekyll and Hyde to Dracula to Dorian Gray and many others, all have their origins.
And still very fresh today, and still
so
regularly reinterpreted.
And that's one of the most interesting things, is that people keep returning to them. Sherlock Holmes, for example, the Holmes stories are not exactly horror stories, but the most famous one of all, The Hound of the Baskervilles, certainly is. And Holmes keeps getting remade. Vampires have never gone away. There are so many of them now that I simply can't keep up.
And there also tend to be trends. We had a zombie phase for about 10 years where zombies were portrayed both comically and horrifically. What is it, do you think, that stirs this need in us to be scared? Is it because of the fight or flight instinct which we've abandoned in supposedly civilized society? Or is it what? Is it a religious impulse? Where do we get this urge to be frightened?
It's all of those things. I think, there are clearly deep-rooted psychological needs and deep-rooted psychological impulses in our makeup that no one's ever really explained as to why the need to be, or the process of being frightened within a contained environment,
a safe environment,
is actually, it's actually in some strange way very pleasurable. People go to horror movies and scream, or used to. I don't know if they do it so much anymore. There's a sense of release about that. And people have often wondered also whether it is some kind of vestige of religion. I think it's no accident that certainly the second half of the 19th century, the great response to the publication of Charles Darwin's Origin of Species in 1859, which rocked the religious establishment, and certainly did in England, the great response to that was not atheism, was not agnosticism, which was a term that was coined actually by T.H. Huxley, who was one of Darwin's colleagues. But it was not those things. It was spiritualism. There was a great resurgence of interest in ghosts, the spirit world, the other world, mediums, clairvoyancy, as though somehow, the sociologist Max Weber once said that we now, our modern world is a disenchanted world, was his phrase for it. And the we live in a world in which we, probably, many of us at least, there's a complete separation between the world of matter, which we all inhabit, and the world of spirit, which some of us believe is out there, but many of us do not.
And is there a correlation then between those who say believe in ghosts and those who believe in religious spirituality, say?
You'd think there would be, and I suspect there is, really. I think it's very difficult to be a hardline materialist atheist and a believer in ghosts and spirits. The two things just do not correlate, which isn't to say that people don't. I mean, we all live with contradictions all the time. One of the things that I've done I've given various kinds of lectures and readings of ghost stories, and one of the questions I'm always asked is, do you believe in ghosts, or have you seen a ghost?
Which was my next question.
Yeah, and my answer is, I have not, to the best of my knowledge, seen a ghost. And far more brilliant people than I have at least seriously entertained the possibility that there is more to life than the material world. There is more to life than that which we see around us. And who am I to say that they're wrong? I think that would be a very rash statement to contradict some of the most brilliant thinkers of the 19th century. And no important writer or thinker of the 19th century, from Darwin to Dickens to the Brownings to the Brontes, none of them was unconcerned with the occult. They were all at least prepared to countenance the idea of the occult. And, that's before we even begin to talk about people like W.B. Yeats, for example, the great Irish poet, who was a genuine occultist and a very high-profile member, in fact, the leader at one point, of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was the foremost occult magical secret society. It wasn't very secret, but, of the late Victorian period. And Yeats firmly believed that his writing was a kind of magic. It animated his writing so much so that he practiced kinds of automatic writing, rather like spiritualists with Ouija boards. And, you know, and you know, kind of claimed that, well, anyway, that the origin of his work was outside of himself, or not, that he was not completely the originator of his own work.
But many artists have that. They say that when they're at their best, they don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to the to ancient ideas of the muse, that somehow the state of artistic creation is a state of being beside oneself, being taken outside of oneself, so that you're not consciously, rationally in control of your own work. So, yes, but I think many artists have claimed that, yeah.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.